Yes. Well, there was a, you know, I don't know at what point, you know, people started being not minding, you know, being called consumers as opposed to citizens. You know, I believe that the idea of basing the economy on the, on people buying things happened after the Second World War. You know, it is, and that is why, if people would, like, think for one second, you know, when they read this stuff or hear this stuff, that is why this economy is not going to be restored. Because the people can buy things in one of two ways. They can afford to pay for them, which was never the case. It was never the case. This, you know, so-called great economy that we had, like, during the Clinton era, this was a debt-based economy.
Right.
So it was never the case that people could have all these things, you know, and pay for them. So it was a case where, for a certain amount of time, they let them charge them, and then they can't charge them anymore. And now there's no jobs. So this is not coming back. You know, things are not going to come back. Things have to be new. You know, I keep hearing, you know, people, there's people that are very well motivated, you know, people that, you know, you feel, you know, an emotional connection to, you know, who say things, you know, we have to bring back, you know, factories in the Midwest and things like that. You know, that's not going to happen. But also, here's what's not going to happen. It's not going to happen that suddenly the population, which is composed mostly of average people, because that's what average means, is suddenly going to be composed of people who are, you know, mathematical geniuses. This problem is that all the work that average people can do, really, no one needs to be done anymore because these machines do this average work. But above average people are very few. And mostly it seems, and this is really something that is, I think, morally contemptible. You know, many of these people have spent the last 20 or 30 years just, instead of thinking up actually new great things, thinking up new horrible things. You know, financial instruments that are not only non-productive but are incredibly destructive, you know, or little variations on products. You know, everyone loves these things. I know they love them. You know, that is why everyone, you know, goes into mourning when Steve Jobs dies. You know, but these are not major contributions, you know, and this is not going to solve the problem.
Well,
the problem is that, first of all, people have to be willing to say they're average. The average Joe, a phrase that doesn't exist anymore, has disappeared. That disappeared and replaced by this word middle class, which is not true and never was. You know, one of the things that people in this country did was always call what in Europe was called the working class the middle class. We never had a working class here after the Second World War. People who worked in factories were considered middle class people. It doesn't matter, you know, in a certain way. People can call themselves what they like, but it is not true.
And what are the implications of calling it the middle class as opposed to the working class? I mean, because...
Well, the implication is that if everyone who was in the working class called themselves the working class, they would have noticed right away that there was no work, okay, instead of waiting till now to notice that there's no middle, okay? It took a lot longer to notice there was no middle than to notice there was no work, you know, and that was the work that disappeared first because those were the easier things to replace with the machines. You know, obviously, if someone does a kind of a job, you know, on an assembly line, that is a job that has already, you know, been sliced and diced, you know, by like Henry Ford, so that, you know, it's a simplified work, a very, by the way, unsatisfying kind of work for human beings, that work disappeared first. The actual middle class didn't care because they weren't doing it, you know. So if the people in the working class had known they were in the working class, which is actually, like, is that a horrible thing to be, would have noticed right away that their work disappeared. You know, and I don't think this union busting, which is detestable, would have been allowed. The hatred for unions in this country by people who should be in them is shocking to me.
Well, part of that happened as a function, I think. I mean, the sort of the spiral down from unions, I think, started, frankly, in the 70s or the late 60s, 70s, where you had that cleave between the social emancipation left, if you will, and the economic left. And in some respects, what we're seeing today, which I think is somewhat encouraging, is that it's sort of that coming back together, although with a much more anemic union movement by multiples of five or seven. We just have a couple of literally a couple of minutes, and I can't thank you enough for staying with me because it's just I love to hear you talk. But let's just if we get continue on this track where we have an incredibly ultra-rich and then the majority, the vast, overwhelming majority of people down at the bottom, you know about the rich psyche as well as anyone I know who's willing to talk about it. What happens to those rich people? Does it even begin to register them, or do they just continue on enjoying what they have?
You know, what we have now in this country is something that the country, in my opinion, was founded to destroy, which is we have irrevocably rich. You know, we have, you know, rich people who are irrevocably rich. They are incredibly, shockingly, stupidly rich, and they have manipulated the entire society to the point where they get people who don't even agree with them to call estate taxes death taxes, to, you know, this is how they keep the money. This is why we had that little war with England, by the way, to begin with. You know, so, you know, I think it doesn't look great to me unless people tell the truth. And one thing people should stop believing is that there are two kinds of rich people. You know, there's not two kinds of rich people. There's not Warren Buffett, who says, I want to pay more taxes, you know, is not, you know, some sort of delightful rich person. You know, Warren Buffett has a stupid amount of money, you know, and he is keeping that stupid amount of money. And, you know, he may be a nicer person, I don't know him, you know, than some other rich person, but basically he's in people's interests. You know, here's the thing. Here's my final answer. People used to identify by class. And I don't mean like class in England, but people used to, you know, think of themselves in connection to people who were in the same economic class as they were. And then at a certain point, everyone started identifying up, you know. And the way they did this was to get the average person, the majority of people, to identify with other aspects of themselves, you know, race, you know, sexuality, gender, all these things. You know, multiculturalism was a tremendous present to these Republicans and to these rich people, a tremendous present, because it took up 30 years while everyone sliced and diced themselves up into these little groups that have nothing to do with public life, that really have to do with your private life. You know, and so to me, the worst thing that happened was the many things that are public and many things that are private change places. You know, people don't even know the difference anymore. You know, so that is something that has to go back. People have to understand the difference between public and private, you know, and stop demanding things for their private life and demand things for their public life.
Fran Lebowitz, I believe you're a national treasure, and I can't thank you enough for coming on today and having this conversation with me, and I hope to do it again soon.